Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in our friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
I think what you're trying to say is you're welcome.
Oh, yes. Very nicely done. Very nicely done. Corey, today, as you just pointed out on Twitter, the 41st anniversary of the Miracle on Ice. You've dubbed it the greatest day in American sports history.
Yeah, easily. I mean, that story is so incredible. And, you know, having been alive for it, you know, just, and I thought the movie did a good job of capturing, you know, the era and what America was going through. And when you just look at the players that won and who they beat, I mean, it's staggering. It's staggering that they won that hockey game, and not only that hockey game, but the whole thing, because that, of course, was the semifinal. That wasn't the final.
Right.
But just getting to the medal round for that squad was amazing. And it's just, you know, it's the power of having the Olympics in your country, number one, but just, and then the ability to dream and fight for what you want. I mean, it's an absolutely unbelievable story that, you know, still, it will ring true to me until the day I die.
Yeah, unbelievable story, and in my opinion, one of the best movies of all time, too. Love the movie. Miracle is awesome.
It's not
it's tremendous. It's really well done.
It's not quite as good a hockey movie as Youngblood, 1985, Rob Lowe.
Hey.
You know
what?
Beautiful hockey hair.
Cynthia Gibbs.
Yeah.
And Patrick Swayze.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That was his buddy, wasn't it? See, I totally forgot about Swayze. I don't forget Cynthia Gibb, but yeah, that's right. Swayze.
Racky was a bad dude.
a lot of good options out there.
That's right. So, Corey, this is the first time we've had you on with us since Carson Wentz was made official and was acquired by the Indianapolis Colts. What did you think of that move for the Colts, and what do you think that does for the pecking order of the AFC South?
Well, first I want to talk about the Eagles, because I saw like everybody was upset about the deal. And I think Howie Roseman, if the organization wanted to move on from Carson Wentz, and I get why they did, I think Howie Roseman deserves a high five, because the Colts were the only suitor that they had, and he still somehow got a first-round pick out of this. I don't know how the Colts gave up a first-round pick when they're the only team that was willing to trade for him. So I think the Colts got robbed, number one. And so I just think Howie Roseman deserves a high five. And look, we know coaches, and coaches all think I can fix him. Because, you know, I don't have anything against Carson Wentz. I've liked to watch Carson Wentz in the past, but he was painful to watch last year. He looked thoroughly broken last year, and they've got some major work to do to fix him. And I get the move from the Colts standpoint, because Frank Reich knows him. And if you look at his cap structure, it's really a one-year deal. He has zero dead money in 2022. So if he goes out there and is just hot garbage this year, they can move on and try somebody else. So, you know, they're not in a great position to draft somebody, and they looked at the rest of the quarterback market, and, you know, we've seen with Mike Vrabel, he likes people he knows. Frank Reich knows Carson Wentz, and from that aspect, it makes sense.
Of course, if you're giving Howie Roseman a high five, you still have to like give him a noogie for setting this whole thing up with the deal to Wentz, though, right? And his entire issues and his team that's not good.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right about that, because he jumped. He pulled the trigger early on it. But you know, when you look at the situation, and like you look at like where the Colts are at, if this deal works out for the Colts, they're in great shape, because his cap situation goes like 22, 24, 25, 26, and in the quarterback world, that would set them up nicely. So, you know, Howie Roseman, it didn't work out, but he was being proactive with the Carson Wentz deal based on him being a good player there for a few years. You know, you don't expect a guy to regress like that, but, you know, that's the chance you take by jumping on a deal early, I guess. And he lost out on that part.
So the thing that I think people talk about a lot with Wentz is obviously how, like you said, terrible last year, and then it's like, what, I think something came out this weekend. He and Doug Peterson didn't talk for like 8 weeks or whatever. Like a lot of red flags. Or the 2017 Wentz, which obviously you're talking about MVP level play. But here's my question: if the Colts get 18-19 Wentz, which is still like top dozen in the league in QBR, not off the charts great, but pretty good. What does that do for them? What are the Colts?
Well, I think they're pretty good because the rest of their roster is pretty good. I mean, you know, I think that category you're talking about is kind of close to where Phillip Rivers was. I mean, this year, Phillip Rivers may have been a little bit behind that. I mean, what do you think Phillip Rivers was, like top 15, top 16 this year? Something like that.
Yeah, just limited, though, you know, like still limited. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
no,
good.
I would agree with that. But I would think if Wentz is okay, that makes them a competitive team, but not good enough still to beat the elite teams. Because I think to beat the elite teams, you've got to have really strong quarterback play. I mean, I don't see game managers getting by Mahomes and Deshaun Watson and Aaron Rodgers and those guys.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Corey, I want to get your thoughts on Rashawn Evans, obviously a former first-round pick, and I felt like in 2019 took some pretty good steps to the point where in the playoffs he was a really good player for the Titans, and it just did not go well, not only for Rashawn Evans, but really the whole defense last year for the Titans. As you evaluate him, what did you think of his season this past year, and what do you think his future looks like with the Titans?
Well, I don't think they're going to be able to pick up that fifth-year option because I think it's going to be too expensive. I mean, that's just, you know, the fifth-year option, everybody looks at it and says, oh, it's a huge insult if you don't pick it up. It's really expensive because I still think that while the Titans picked up Adoree Jackson, I don't think he's going to see it. I think they're going to waive him before that time gets here on March 17th because I don't know that he's worth over $10 million with the way he played last year. And I don't know what the fifth-year option is at linebacker for the 20-whatever pick he was. I'm going to guess it's like $8, $9 million, but I have no idea. But it's going to be a lot. And so I don't know if they're going to go there. Now, last year he had discipline issues, which, you know, from when we actually did get to talk to Rashawn in the locker room, I don't think any of us would have seen that coming because he's a very level-headed, good guy to talk to, but you know, you flip a switch when you go on the field, and you know, his switch, you know, was a little too high at times last year, and he had undisciplined penalties that he's got to get a hold of. And so, you know, I think Rashawn has been a good player for the Titans, not a great player for the Titans. He has had moments in some, you know, short yardage situations in particular where he's done very well. But you know, when you look at cap and you look at, you know, the ability to replace players at a lower number, you know, that's where you start going, can we replace this guy, you know, and not give him $7, $8 million a year and replace him at $2 million? And I think you probably can. And that's not my way of saying I want Rashawn Evans to go. I want Rashawn Evans to stay and make $15 million a year. But as I always say, it's not the best 53. It's the best 53 under the cap. And the Titans, like most teams right now, are under a cap strain, and they've got some major moves to make. And, you know, that fifth-year option I just don't see happening once again for the Titans.
So you think Adoree Jackson is the choice of sacrifice, or one of the choices?
Well, you know, look, I have a hard time seeing him getting over $10 million a year. So if you wanted to restructure a deal, you know, sure. And I believe in this. I believe I'm paying players for what they are, not for what they were, okay, or what they could be. All I can go on is what they are, all right? This is what we got. And with Adoree, you know, we've got a guy who's flashed to play at a high level, has been injury-prone, has had confidence issues at time, and has been a bust in the return game, okay? That doesn't scream to me eight figures a year, okay? You know, if you told me you could pay Adoree $5 or $6 million a year, I'd say, yeah, sign him up, let's do it, let's move forward and see what we got here. But, you know, in a year where you're up against the cap, You know, that's this is the game we played in the sports office last night. You know, who would you rather have on the team next year, Adoree Jackson or Corey Davis?
That's a good question.
Based on what they did last year, it'd be Corey Davis.
Yeah.
Who would you rather have on the team next year, Adoree Jackson or Jonnu Smith?
Jonnu.
Okay. Adoree Jackson or Jayon Brown, based on what they've done for this football team?
See, with all these, I hear all the – these are good questions, but my answer back on all of them is, man, you need speed in the secondary. You know, and I understand –
Well, you need him on the field too.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But, like, I don't know that I'm picking both Corey and Jonnu over having Adoree, for example. Like, you'd like him back, but what's your secondary – like, what's the upside of your secondary – next year if you don't have him? So you're obviously keeping – because basically it's a 10.2 savings with either one of those guys if you move on,
yeah, well,
right? Because you got $4 million in dead money for Butler.
You can sign Desmond King, and I know he's not the speed that Adoree is. I know that. You know, Christian Fulton runs pretty well. I mean, one of the things that we liked about when they drafted him was his ability to run deep and find the football. I mean, that's what the tape showed in college. But, I mean – I understand Dory's speed, but there are very few instances where that speed has shown up for us here in Tennessee, and we've said, wow, his speed was really the difference there. I mean, can you say in the last 4 years that his speed has been a difference for the Titans defense?
I feel like the second half of 2019, I thought he was very,
so
very
years,
important to that defense.
I would agree with that, but you're talking about an 8-week window out of 4 years.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
and again,
I don't know.
When I look at the 2017 draft class, and, you know, they've had a lot of very important players in that class, Corey, Adoree, Jayon, Jonnu, and you could lose all of them in this offseason. And that's tough to swallow, to lose – you know, four guys who've been really important players for you.
Corey Curtis from News 2 has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Row. Corey, great stuff, man. We appreciate you taking time to join us.
All right, thanks, guys. Big day tomorrow. Franchise tag day.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Anyone use it.
That's all right. Absolutely. Corey Curtis, nice. Our guest, joins us every week here on Monday mornings at 8 o'clock here on Robbie and Rex Row. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Corey had to say there and get your thoughts as well. What does the future look like for Rashawn Evans and Adoree Jackson in a Titans uniform? Let us know, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in when the Preds have a weekday game this season. It's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game that night, you will win a prize pack. The next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45. The Predators taking on the Detroit Red Wings tomorrow on the road. So make sure you're tuning in for that. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe Rex Road. Do you have a text line?
Yeah, I got a lot of text lines to get to. First of all, just let me thank Greg Pogue and Gentry Estes for correcting my pronunciation.
Okay.
Because you know, Bellarmine, as I said, is new in the A Sun, but actually, do you know?
It's
you know
Bellarmine.
Porth? Huh?
It's Bellarmine. Bellarmine.
It's Bellarmine now. That is right. It's Bellarmine. So Gentry hit me with that. Now Pogue hit me with first he said Bellarmine. But then he quickly corrected himself. Bellarmine. So there you go. It's Bellarmine. I apologize. Honestly, I had never heard anybody say Beller fill in the blank until like I said it right there. I've read it.
See, I used to be a ball boy for Northern Kentucky University, and
okay.
They used to play Bellarmine every year in the same conference in the D2 or whatever.
So why didn't you help me right there? I said it on the air, and you just let me go. You let
because
me
we went to break, and I wasn't going to correct you.
Okay. Yeah. Also on the text line, my personal text line, Vingan has texted me to clarify. Vingan has been listening to the first hour of the show.
Well, thanks, Adam.
That's very nice of you, Adam. Thank you, Adam. And he wanted to clarify on Pecorino. He has an MNTC, so you know,
modified.
Yeah, modified NTC protects him against waivers. He does have a 10-team yes list. So there you go on Pekka. The untouchable Pekka.
Yes. We'll revisit that discussion a little bit later here in the show. Probably won't phrase it that way, but we'll revisit it later here in the show. God.
Why do I do this to myself?
Well, Ryan Porth is going to be totally useless for this entire segment. So we'll just have to do this without Porth at this point and move on from the untouchable Pekka as part of this conversation. All right, let's get
back
into...
What the hell is wrong with people?
Let's get back into the Tennessee Titans. Corey Curtis from News 2 joined us in the last segment. You two are going to have to stop. I can't sit here and hold this together by myself. Last segment, we were talking about Rashawn Evans and what the future could look like with the Tennessee Titans. Now, we talked about it a little bit last week. Obviously, Jayon Brown scheduled to be a free agent coming up. Some people, like Pro Football Focus, have him re-signing with the Tennessee Titans and being a part of the fold once again. Some people do not. I think you and I both have said we would be, I guess, surprised at this point if Jayon Brown is back in the fold with the Titans. But if you are the Titans and you're John Robinson and you're looking at this situation, if you don't have confidence in Rashawn Evans that he's going to be here long-term, how does that affect the way you view Jayon Brown? Does that make him a higher priority if you're the Titans heading into this offseason?
Let's see if I can do this. my gosh. Just terrible with words. yeah, I've kind of ruled out Jayon Brown. Like, and interesting, though, I've kind of ruled in Adoree Jackson. And Corey brought up a good point. The puzzle's so... I mean, it's fascinating. It's interesting. It's got to be maddening for John Robinson because I've kind of ruled out Jayon Brown. But to your point, if you don't like where things are going with Rashawn Evans, maybe you feel like you've got to pay right now. You know, you've got to pay and keep Jayon. If that's the case, I mean, is it possible? I can't imagine. We just talked last segment about Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler. Both of them, you can save 10-2, basically.
Right.
Is it possible they both go? You know, I can't imagine that. You know, is it possible that they're going to lose both Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis? I think that's certainly possible. If a lot of that stuff happens, then I think you bring back one of your best playmakers on defense for sure. You know, I've kind of ruled him out, but again, it's worth discussing. Like, there's so many different things here that are in play for them, including how much are they actually going to go spend on someone to help the defense?
Yeah, that's a big question. And we talked last week about John Robinson and the press conference that he had, kind of going through a whole laundry list of items for the Titans heading into the offseason and the combine and the draft, all that stuff that we would typically be talking about now with COVID being a little bit different this year, throwing that off. But John Robinson talked about Jayon Brown in his comments last week and maybe what the future could look like. Here's what Titans general manager John Robinson had to say.
He's a really instinctive player. He's good in zone coverage. He's good in man coverage. He's been disruptive as a blitzer for us. You know, he's kind of this, I don't want to say new age of linebacker, but this kind of this undersized, productive player who relies on his instincts, his speed, and his ability to match players. You know, if you can take a target away that the quarterback's going to throw to, then the quarterback's got to hold the ball longer and it gives you a chance to get there in the rush. You know, he's been a good player for us. You know, unfortunate. We certainly could have used him down the stretch there when he got hurt. But we'll see kind of how that goes moving forward.
So that was John Robinson last week discussing Jayon Brown. And just as he said at the end, we'll see how it goes moving forward with his contract and whether or not the Titans are willing and able to make that work. Rashawn Evans is interesting to me because, as Corey said, you know, 2019, I thought he took a big step, played really well. Coming down the stretch, heading into the playoffs, I thought was a really good player for the Titans and then just took a total step backward this past season to the point where, like, I don't know if you're John Robinson, the Titans, how you could be comfortable picking up the fifth-year option right now. Now, maybe they do it, and maybe you just kind of bite the bullet that way and hope that the best of what you've seen from Rashawn Evans is going to be what he is moving forward, but I'd have a hard time if I'm the Titans feeling comfortable that that's absolutely the case now with him moving forward. I still like a lot of his ability and what he can do, but we've not seen it consistently enough from Rashawn Evans to justify the money that he could get from a fifth-year option.
Yeah, my guess would be no right now. I don't think it's like the obvious slam dunk, no way, that you had with like a Corey Davis. And please, and you know, like if Corey Davis signs with someone for a lot of money and he goes on to have a great, like, please, Preds fans, Titans fans, don't revisit the option that was never a thing. There was no way. No one would have paid him that option based on his production, injuries, and the fact that he's a top five pick, which makes for more money. $15.7 million. That was not going to happen. Like Conklin, same thing. I mean, I think that was the right decision because you weren't sure about his health. Evans is tough. I would guess no, but I think that's tied to Jayon Brown too. Like, you can't just start over totally. You know, you can't just go. I mean, how many draft picks are you going to use on inside linebacker? You know,
yeah.
Or you can go pick up some guys. You can roll with Will Compton. I mean, I think you've got to have bodies there and some good players there and invest a certain amount. But that one is hard to predict. A lot of them are easy. I think Rashawn Evans one is hard. I could make the case to still pay that and feel like last year was an outlier and that, you know, you can get 2019 Rashawn Evans back.
What do you think of what Corey threw out in the last segment of maybe moving on from Adoree Jackson before the fifth-year option kicks in, talking about, you know, being in eight figures with Adoree Jackson, and in Corey's opinion, has not seen enough at this point to justify that. What do you think of the idea of, we've talked about maybe with Malcolm Butler, what about Adoree Jackson, the Titans moving on from him and going that route on defense?
Yeah, I mean, just like with Jayon, I've kind of assumed he's going to be elsewhere. I've kind of just penciled Adoree Jackson in next year. But the bottom line is that basically, you know, for that 1 year, it's the same amount. Now, you have Malcolm Butler has multiple years left on his deal,
right?
You know, so you have to keep that in mind too. I mean, if you move on from him, you know, then, you know, you're saving more, I guess, overall. But it's a 10-2 basically savings either way. It's possible. I have a sunnier view of Adoree Jackson than Corey does. Agree to disagree with Corey on Adoree. And the other Corey.
Nice.
That's my story. I mean, this is one of the weirdest segments we've ever done.
So what you're saying is Adoree Jackson is not untouchable.
Untouchable Adoree. Unlike the...
Doesn't have the same ring to it.
Yeah. The untouchable Rene, as I mentioned earlier. That's what I said earlier, right? The untouchable Rene.
Alrighty.
Good God.
With that in mind, we're going to go to a break now. When we come back, we'll continue to discuss the Tennessee Titans and look at Adam Humphries and what his future could look like with the Titans. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I think Porth finally calmed down, composed himself a little bit over there.
All right.
Wasn't as good as Clowney's workload.
No, it was close though.
That's. I was just gonna say, whose please work?
Be careful.
Lo, what were we talking about then? You remember that it was Clowney. Okay.
How could you forget? It's your boy.
Yeah.
Joe's Clowney.
Joe's Clowney. Yeah.
Oh,
keep
man.
That workload down.
Speaking of the Tennessee Titans, going to be interesting to see what happens, not only with Corey Davis at wide receiver, but Adam Humphries as well. 2 years left on his contract. And number one, I mean, you just wish the best for Adam Humphries in terms of his recovery, that nasty hit he took in Cincinnati. Never got back on the field for any, you know, extended length of time after that. I think he got back into practice a little bit, but was never able to get back on the field and play and resume activity for the Titans. And you talked about it at the time. I mean, you have to wonder about what his long-term future looks like right now in the NFL. But just strictly from, you know, a contract standpoint, a decision standpoint, a cost-cutting standpoint, if you're the Titans, I have a hard time seeing Adam Humphries being back in the fold next year, just based on how much money that he's being paid and based on, you know, fairly or unfairly, he's not been available to them anywhere near as much as they hoped when they signed him to that contract.
Yeah, but what if Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith move on?
Yeah.
This is where it's I can't remember an offseason with these guys quite like this where you have so much either or with so many different players at different spots. If you lose Corey Davis, if you lose Corey Davis, you already know you have to replenish your depth. You have to be deeper and better at receiver.
Sure.
So would you not want, if Humphreys is all in and he gets the clean bill of health, and I know it's a good chunk of change, but let's also remember with Humphreys, it's not like if you cut him, you're saving $9.75 million. You're saving $4.75 million. $5 million of that's dead. So, I mean, to me, I'd rather invest in that and have him. And maybe even if you have Davis, I don't know. It's tough. It's hard to almost remember how important Adam Humphreys can be to this offense. Yeah. But Ryan Tannehill will tell you. They have a great thing, and he feels probably as confident in him as anyone on third and five that he can get him six, you know? So he's another interesting case. I just don't think you can totally go rookie/free agent because what are you paying for, you know, if you go out there and get a Marvin Jones or something like that, what are you paying, you know, for that player? I mean, I think if you feel great about one slot receiver and A.J. Brown – you lose Corey Davis, you draft people, you sign someone, I think you still feel good about the receiving core. If you lose Humphreys and Davis, that's a lot of starting over.
Right, but he's also got to be available. I mean, that's something that the Titans, I mean, he struggled to do that the last couple of years and be on the field. And look, I think everybody would agree, when he's been on the field, pretty good weapon for the Titans. I mean, you talk about a weapon in the slot, you know, third and seven or shorter. That guy can get open. He can hang in there with anybody in the league and get open. And that's a huge weapon to have. And I think you saw it when they didn't have him available in the second half of the season. The offense still hummed along pretty well because you've got Henry and A.J. Brown and Corey Davis was playing well. But basically, Anthony Firkser turned into the slot receiver for the Titans down the stretch. And as good as I think he is, I don't think that's an ideal world for Anthony Firkser to be your go-to slot guy if you're Ryan Tannehill and the Titans. So I hear you. Like, if he's healthy and you feel good that he's over the symptoms and he's going to be fine heading into next season, particularly if you lose Corey Davis, I do think you've got to consider it. But you can't just ignore, if you're the Titans, the fact that he's been largely unavailable at his time so far with your team.
Right. I did take from John Robinson's comments last week that they feel like he wants back.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that to me was encouraging on that front. I mean, a lot of times with players now, when you get to a stage like this, you kind of expect to hear from them, you know, that they're thinking about moving on. Or, I mean, a lot of guys are retiring quickly when they start having these issues, but we haven't heard anything from him. Robinson made it sound like he's intending to come back. So, if that's the case, There's another player that I sort of penciled off the roster that I might put back on.
And you mentioned the comments from John Robinson last week regarding Adam Humphreys. Here were those comments. Here's what Titans general manager John Robinson had to say.
And with Adam Humphreys, obviously missed a significant amount of time with the concussions at the end of the season. Is his career in jeopardy? And if not, how do you evaluate a guy who's had an issue like that moving forward?
Well, there's nothing more important, we've said it many times, than the health and the safety of our players. And that was a pretty tough hit he took there. We're just continuing to monitor and talk to the doctors and talk to Adam and make sure everything is, you know, that he's back to normal just kind of see how that goes.
So that was John Robinson talking about the future of Adam Humphreys. And as far as the Titans are concerned, Joe, with the draft, I think even if Corey Davis and Adam Humphreys are both back next season, you still got to draft a receiver if you're the Titans. Like, to me, there's not a scenario out there where the Titans don't draft a receiver. At least there shouldn't be, in my opinion. I know you've got needs all over the place defensively, but we saw it. I mean, basically, once Humphreys went down, it was A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, and that was it for the Titans receiving core last year. You've got to find a way to add some depth, and you've got to do it through the draft. Really, I think, regardless of the situation, even if Davis is back and Humphreys is back, especially if one of the two of them, or maybe both of them, are gone, you've got to address that position in the draft.
Yeah, I agree. I thought so last year, too. I was surprised that they didn't because it's not just need and everything, but it's also that last draft, this draft, probably a lot of drafts to come, a lot of talent, a lot of good receivers. Yep. Receivers are much more likely to contribute significantly early in the NFL now than I think they were a decade ago. And, yeah, you've got to draft somebody. I think you got to sign somebody. You've got to have a better, more well-rounded room and that's better able to handle some injuries next year.
So we talked last segment about Adoree Jackson and what his future could look like with the Titans, but a guy we've spent a lot of time talking about the offseason so far has been Malcolm Butler. One of the few, I think both of us would agree, one of the few guys that played pretty well on defense last season for the Titans. So as you evaluate that part of it, also with the money that is being owed to Malcolm Butler, how much consideration do you give to moving on from Malcolm Butler if you're the Titans? Because there are Titans fans out there that feel like there's no scenario where you don't bring Malcolm Butler back next year based on the way that he's played.
I think, you know, the more I think about it with everything else, we've been talking about Jayon Brown getting signed. You know, we're talking about Humphreys, yes or no, trying to keep Jonnu and Corey, all that stuff. I find it unlikely that both Malcolm Butler and Adoree Jackson will be back. I mean, it's you can count on this. Butler, Jackson, King, they all won't be back for sure, right? I mean, there's no way. So my question to answer your question is, what do they think about Desmond King? How much do they value him? How much do they feel like they want to try to re-sign him to some kind of multi-year deal right now as he's a free agent? You could roll with Butler, Adoree, and Fulton in the slot. And I think Christian Fulton, based on all these cap issues and all these other choices you have to make, I think you have to, if you're John Robinson, say Christian Fulton is starting for this team at cornerback next year. He was a second-round pick. He was hurt. He has the ability. He has to start. We have to get something out of the 2020 draft,
right?
And we can't pay everybody. So I would start there. I feel confident that Christian Fulton will be one of the top three corners on the team next year. Question is, are two of the three others back or just one? I can't imagine that they would both not try to sign Desmond King and get rid of one of Adoree or Malcolm Butler. But you know what? Crazier things have happened because you've got to find money. You've got to find space. And you can also find it with Kenny Vaccaro. There's another possible cut, certainly. I mean, I think that one, you know, you would save. Now, again, remember, it's not like with Humphreys. It's just like with Humphreys. You don't get the whole savings. You know, with Vaccaro, 3.9 is your savings. $3 million in dead money still. So it's not as big as you would think based on just like his base salary. But it's still, I mean, $4 million helps you.
Yeah.
You know? I still think there's a real solid chance that it's Butler, Adoree, and Fulton, and King moves on. But the more you talk about it and if you add all the other numbers up, I could see one of those two being gone. And I personally would probably move on from Butler. And I understand anybody arguing otherwise. He was really good last year. He is exactly what you want from a competitive standpoint, physicality. I have a sunnier view of Adoree Jackson as a football player than like Corey Curtis does, for example. I don't know. What would you pick?
Well, I would hold on to Butler based on the way that he's played. I think Vaccaro may end up being the casualty here.
But if you had to pick between those two, if you had to pick between Butler and Adoree Jackson.
Oh, I'd probably pick Butler.
You'd keep Butler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would. I mean, and I've said it even before the season started. There's another level that Adoree Jackson needs to get to, and I just don't think he's gotten there consistently enough. Now, is his upside higher? Probably. But I've got to see it. Like, and it's hard to judge, and I know the last thing we saw from Adoree Jackson wasn't good. To me, it's hard to judge last season based on the injury and how long it took him to get on the field. And quite frankly, once he was there, I mean, everything else around him was going so poorly that I'm not sure how you correctly judge anybody on that defense last year, given how atrocious the whole picture was. But I do think picking up his fifth-year option, he's about to be making a lot of money, and there's got to be a significant increase in the quality of his play. And he's got to stay on the field more. I mean, that's got to be part of it too. But I was really impressed by what I saw from Malcolm Butler last year. So I would probably select Butler.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, it's like I know you have to also think about this in terms of like Mike Vrabel. Not that there's any question. I bet you Butler would be among his favorite guys on this team.
Sure.
Because of how he competes, just like every day in practice. He's that guy who, like, he sets a certain tone, a certain standard. And Adoree Jackson is, it's not like that. You know, Adoree Jackson is, I think, a guy who very well liked on the team, but he's not, you know, Malcolm Butler, there's a lot of dog there. You want to see a lot more in Adoree Jackson. So, that has to go into the decision. I still also, though, I would pick Adoree because he's better. And he can run with some of the faster guys in this league, and that is something that you just can't find a lot of out there, you know. But it would be very difficult. It's tough.
Well, I'm interested, like, if it plays out this way where your three corners are Butler, Adoree, and Fulton, how do they line that up? I mean, because they spent time with Fulton in the slot. Are you comfortable with that? Did he show you enough there where that's the direction you want to go? Or do you move Fulton back to where he played in college, and that is outside, and maybe move Adoree inside? We've talked about Adoree, you know, maybe having the tools to be a good slot corner. It's not really something they've done. Could that be an option for the Titans as they move forward?
Yeah, and, you know, the way teams try to get you in matchups, I mean, even in the slot, you are, you know, it's critically important. I don't know. I do know that if you moved on from one of them, then you're probably moving Fulton to the outside.
Yeah.
You know? So, probably, but that's the thing. Like, again, maybe they're like, you know what? Desmond King is the perfect slot corner for this defense, and we got to have him. And Fulton can go to one of the outside spots, and then it's a matter of picking between these guys. There's a lot of, again, it's like, there's a lot of moving parts and puzzle pieces that one thing affects the other. That's the only thing I feel great about, though, is that Christian Fulton is one of the top three corners when the roster is unveiled in 21, which may not be that comforting to Titans fans. You didn't see much of him, and he wasn't great when he was out there, but that's how you have to run a team in the salary cap. You have to do things like that.
When we come back, we'll switch gears and dive back into the Nashville Predators, a impressive win for the Preds over the weekend in Columbus. Where's that been all season long? We'll discuss it. Coming up next, this is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Here's Forsberg breaking in. His shot, he scores! Philip Forsberg comes down through the left circle, got in tight, and put it away, and the Predators now lead 4-2.
And time runs out on this one as the Predators come away with a 4-2 victory over the Blue Jackets here tonight.
Certainly a game I think we can build off some things that we did really well, and that's how we want to play. So it's nice we were able to put together 60 minutes of that.
A big win for the Nashville Predators on Saturday night. They win 4-2 against the Columbus Blue Jackets, improved to 7-10-0 on the season. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be joined by Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica Chase, also handles the Predators' pre- and post-game duties coming up to begin the 9 o'clock hour, so looking forward to that conversation as well.
Hey, Porth, do you know the name of the song that was just our intro music right there? Do you know what song that was?
Isn't that No Vaseline?
Okay. Well, there you go. I wasn't necessarily asking you to say it on the air, but yeah. It was just an interesting choice on your part. Like,
had a good beat.
All right. That's fine. Never mind. I'll let you listen to the lyrics later. Possibly the greatest hip-hop diss track ever by Ice Cube.
Yeah.
For my fellow hip-hop fans out there. And if you know the lyrics, then you know what I'm talking about right now. It's kind of the theme of the show today. Anyway.
I thought a pretty good performance from Pecorino the other night, too. What'd you think, Joe?
Darn near untouchable.
But in all seriousness, probably the best performance from the Predators from start to finish this season. Up 2-0 in the first period. They got the lead that they've struggled to get so far this year. Now, they gave it up pretty quickly into the second. It was 2-2. But even after that, I thought the Predators responded well, continued to control the game, and walk out with a 4-2 win. Two goals from Callie Yarncroke. Philip Forsberg puts it away, as you heard in the highlight there, to open up the segment. But all in all, I thought by far their best performance of the season.
The Preds are, I'll say this right now, put me down as an early Monday call your shot. The Preds will not lose games in which Callie Yarncroke scores two goals.
I like that.
Count it.
Okay.
Guaranteed.
How many of those are going to happen?
Like I said, the Preds will not lose any games in which Cali Yonkra. Hey, he should have had a hat trick, by the way.
He should have.
He was a half inch from a hat trick.
Yeah, he was close. Great game from Cali Yonkroke, and you know they tried some different lineups. Now they've been kind of throwing the lineup into a blender as of late. But I was fascinated when I saw like the pregame skate rushes of Forsberg, Granlund, and Arvidsson. Granlund playing at center, pretty interesting. I thought they played pretty well together in that game.
That was I did not see that one coming, but trying a lot of things.
Yeah,
trying a lot of things, and look, they looked good. They had one bad stretch or they let it get tied real fast. And frankly, I don't think Pecorine really had a chance on either of those.
No.
And other than that, they outplayed them. So here's a question for you on the Preds. So we get to the end of last week and all we're talking about is how they're going to blow it up and who's going to blow it and everything. So how many Preds fans, as a Vols fan, you're very, very qualified to answer
sure.
this question.
Yeah.
How many Preds fans are hate watching this team right now?
Well, I think there's a few.
Yeah.
If my Twitter mentions are any indication, yeah, there's a few.
So it's like people almost like rooting for them to lose.
Yeah.
At this point.
That happens. Oh, well, a lot of these people
That's
are the same people though. Like they're Tennessee fans and they're Preds fans.
Right.
So there's built-in experience.
So the Vols fans who are very used to hate watching like just lose Butch or
yeah.
just lose Pruitt.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're used to it. It's an interesting and that's where, you know, if this goes the way it looks like it's going to go, at some point if they go younger and Tomasino is up and things like that, then you can go back to, you know, not hate watching them. But here's my question. What if they go on a run? What if they rip off, you know, if they play just like they played Saturday, why couldn't they beat Detroit twice this week, Columbus twice? What if they go on a tear? How much of a tear would it take to end all hate watching?
I don't know. I mean, to your point, you've got two games coming up against Detroit this week, and we know it. Detroit's not very good. Now, we also know that the Predators just played Detroit a week ago and had their worst performance of the year. So that still very much is on the table. You've got to get that taste out of your mouth. But then you've got Columbus right after that twice on a Saturday-Sunday matinee back-to-back, which we're all looking forward to coming up this weekend. Love matinee hockey. And the problem is after that, you go Carolina, Florida, Florida, Carolina, Carolina, Tampa Bay, Florida, Florida.
And then
that's a heck of a stretch right there.
and at the end of that, what I think is it like March 23rd they play Detroit again?
Yeah, March 23rd, Detroit.
Like if you are trading and you better be, including the entire league in that, this Canadian teams
yeah.
need someone by then.
Yeah.
About. Yeah.
You got 2 weeks to quarantine after you make a trade. So
if you're not
speed it up a little bit.
So if you're not perfect, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Obviously, I mean, you could wait for a guy. You're going to have to wait for a guy regardless, you know, when you make a trade for
sure.
your Canadian team. But but basically, like, if you're not perfect by the end of February, is that fair?
I mean, that's a heck of a bar. But, yeah, I guess. I mean, that's the situation they're in right now. You're 7-10.
I mean, I know the guys on the team don't think that way, you know. Obviously, they've got to, you know. But realistically, in the hockey world, this team and other teams looking at them as a seller, you know, that status is changed by dramatically turning things
yeah.
around.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, was Saturday night a reflection of maybe them building things and figuring things out the right way, or was that a flash in the pan game and it's not what they really are, and then they come back this week and maybe you drop one to Detroit? Because if that happens, like, the body of work's getting to the point where the team just is what it is. Now, you know, John Hines talked about it after the game. They did, obviously, a lot of really good things on Saturday. You had 45 shots on goal. Like I said to start the segment, you controlled the game from start to finish. It was a great game from the Predators. Is that something that they can actually build on, or was that a flash in the pan?
Yeah, every time we talk about something to build on, not that there's been a ton of those times, but whenever we've brought it up, they usually lose the next game. They are, I assume, getting Ryan Johansson back very soon, though, right?
Yeah. That sounds like it.
This week, potentially. Yeah. So, although he's been replaced as
Granlund,
by Granlund
top line
as the top
center.
Line center. But other than that, welcome to the fourth line, Ryan.
See how that goes in
there. By the way, Joe, you mentioned how the Predators will never lose any games ever where Cali Yonkroke scores two goals.
Oh, you found one,
already
huh?
found a
yeah,
stat.
Yeah, found one. Found one last season, the overtime, the Halloween
Vancouver?
Night. No, the Halloween night against Calgary where went sideways last season.
Okay.
He scored two goals that night and they lost.
There goes your theory.
Jeez. So actually, when he scores two goals, it signals impending doom.
But the other three or four times that he has scored multiple goals in a game, they've won.
Okay.
So the odds are in your favor.
You would think, for the most part, Kelly Yonkro gets you a couple goals. You would think that you'd be in good shape.
Yeah.
Because that's not happening a ton.
No. Did not happen a ton. And like you said, almost had three. Very close to having three. And then Phil, the goal by Forsberg Saturday night. Just beautiful.
Just
waltzes right in. Cuts to the middle of the ice. That little kind of flick of the wrist shot he has. It's in the back of the net before Columbus could turn around.
It's not like he had a great angle on his shot.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful goal by Forsberg. And that's what we were talking about earlier. Like we brought up the, you know, report over the weekend from Elliot Friedman about, you know, the Predators have three untouchable players and Ryan Ellis, Roman Josi, Pekka-Rinne, and Forsberg. You know, a lot of Predators fans are like, you know, Philip Forsberg, not on that list? And again, this is not like set in stone concrete information from Elliot Friedman. But if you're the Predators, and obviously people will probably call if this continues this way about Philip Forsberg and gauge your interest, it would take a lot, a whole lot, for me to be willing to move on from Philip Forsberg.
And Friedman says he's very surprised to find out that Fabbro might be on the block. That's interesting. I mean, I would be more surprised about
because of
Forsberg.
His age.
Yeah, sure. I get it, but I'd be more surprised about a proven great player such as Philip Forsberg.
Right. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, obviously Duchesne not having the year that he would want to have from Johansson, Arvidsson. The one guy who has responded pretty heavily, Philip Forsberg has been awesome this year. There's not a whole lot of bright spots with this Predators team right now. Philip Forsberg has been every bit the player that you want him to be so far this year, which is encouraging moving forward because I think that was kind of the challenge for him. He talked about it. He came on with us, you know, like a week before the season started and talked about it, that he's got to take it to a different level. And so far, I think he has.
Yeah, well, it's important for him to get that goal there tonight because I actually thought he was going into one of the down streaks because that's what he's been, is he's been very streaky his whole career. And so it was kind of, he had a not great game last week, and I don't remember which one it was, but it was sort of like a game, I think the first one all year where I was like, did Forsberg play?
Yep.
Not much of that this year, but good for him to get that goal because that's the thing. If he's going to be, when things get back to 82 games, if he's going to be someone who can approach 40 goals, which I think he has the talent to do, you can't have long droughts. And this team can't afford him to have any droughts.
Coming up next, we'll continue the discussion on the Nashville Predators. Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica Chase, also handles the Predators' pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network. He'll join us next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.